in our appeals, and we now have some unfinished business. I understand the county added a code of ethics for all employees and boards. I'm not familiar with this particular code of ethics mentioned in our agenda today. Other than that, is it the same one that the county imposed on everybody who is working and involved with the county? Is that correct, Donna?
So I believe it's Rebecca had proposed some ethics for the board, which is, I am not involved in that decision. I will say that the county has adopted certainly ethics rules and regulations.
And that's currently recent, correct?
What has happened recently is the establishment of an ethics review commission and a process in which to submit potential ethic violations to this review commission. That was codified and figured out and laid out by the county and probably, I'm sure HR was involved or whatever. In the end of May, I, as a manager, just received the official training on it yesterday. So it's all fairly new.
And I shared that.
It's all over their website, though. There's lots of information on it.
I did look at it. That's why I thought it was very recent. And I wasn't sure if this was in addition to that or part of that.
From what I understand is that basically the county has said that ethics are important enough that we need to have a reporting process for all of our boards, including advisory boards. Us adopting our own code of ethics gives us sort of like a starting point of, if anyone ever comes at us with a complaint about what we're doing, we have this code of ethics that we started with. We can certainly modify it as we see fit. We can improve it, change it, whatever. But this gives us a starting point for how our board will function. And it is very similar to the ethics set that other boards are using. And it's, you know, it's fairly straightforward. There's nothing too crazy about it. So.
Okay. So do you want to read each? Because she's online.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to read the first one?
And I sent these out. Everybody got this via email. So I don't know if everyone's had a chance to review it, but I can certainly go through each one. So number one, volunteer members of the Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board shall perform all duties incumbent upon the position without fear or favor and with impartial consideration and respect for every individual's status, sex, race, religion, political belief, or aspirations. The Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board professionals must conduct themselves in a manner above reproach that does not bring discredit to the associated agencies or themselves. Number two, the Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board professionals will never allow personal feelings, animosities, or friendships to influence official conduct and will strive to obtain maximum results for the betterment of animal protection and control services. APCAB professionals must exercise a consistent and wise use of discretion to preserve good relationships and retain the confidence of the public. Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board professionals may see, hear, or learn confidential information in the performance of their duties. Individuals have a reasonable right and expectation to privacy and confidentiality. Such information shall remain and be kept confidential except where legal, ethical, or performance of duty obligations require otherwise. Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board professionals will not engage in acts of corruption or bribery, nor will an advisory board member condone any such act by other members. The public demands that the integrity of all public servants be above reproach. The Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board professionals must therefore avoid any conduct that might compromise integrity and that undercuts the public's confidence in an agency. Animal Protection and Control Advisory Board professionals will be responsible for their own standard of professional performance and will take every reasonable opportunity to enhance and improve their level of knowledge and confidence.
Thank you for making the effort to put this all together.
Oh, you bet.
I think we should be able to address anything that somebody has a question on or would like to make a potential wording change or addition.
I like it a lot. I'm just wondering, does this work the same way as everything else? Like if we were to move forward with it, do the other board members automatically then approve it, or is it like individually?
Well, since we have a quorum and yeah. We adopt these, then these become the rules that govern yeah. that all the board members need to adhere okay. to.
Yeah. And you don't want us to sign them in some
way? I don't.
It doesn't have to be signed. It's if you vote upon it, yeah. It's part of our requirements.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I wonder if professionals can, I don't know, you probably didn't saw it in the code, like since we're also residents, I guess the word professional okay to use? I'm just asking because I don't know. Since we're
I see what you're saying of like,
what should we just say, members?
Members maybe. Instead of professionals?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe there's no problem with it. I just wonder if. Because professional, I would imagine it's when you work.
I think you're correct. We shouldn't have the word professional because we're volunteers. Even though you might be a professional in your own career, we're not paid for this. So I think the word, and also address your question, we could make proposals to this tonight and let it be voted upon by a 9-member board at the next meeting. Because there's some very good stuff in here, but we probably get more buy-in if everybody has a chance to look at it and see it or have some time to think about it.
This has been in play for months. I have sent this document out.
You're out of order. I was talking and you cut me off. I'm saying it might be advisable to have other people look at that. Unless we decide tonight that we're okay with the four of us deciding that, okay? And I understand because I do remember this, okay? And I'm okay with like 99% of the wording. I agree with the word professionals should be changed. Would you like to say something now?
Yeah, I would. I would like it on record that this has been a topic of discussion for months. It has been sent out repeatedly to all board members asking for feedback, asking for any language changes, providing all types of support links to expectations and hopes from the state down to the county level. So I would hope that we can go ahead and put this behind us. Like this has been an agenda item, I don't even know how many times. It's fairly straightforward. It addresses volunteer members of the animal protection in the very first topic. I'm happy to change professionals to volunteers. That's not a problem at all. The language is really straightforward. You know, I just read them and I'm pretty sure that everybody in this room is quite happy to live up to all of those things. So what's there more to discuss? Are we gonna invite people to be on the board that won't live up to this?
So is that a question?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I was addressing was her concern. Her concern was, do you think it's important to consider the 5 other members who aren't here or will be here? And if you, and personally, I'd like to get as much done today with our 4-person quorum so we can move on.
Yeah.
So I don't even disagree with you. I had one wording item on this from before that I mentioned in our previous discussion. That was on number 2. We'll never allow personal feelings. I don't think that I'd like to strike that because you have your own personal basis on how you make your decision, your religious basis or your personal basis. And then other than that, I see no objection to anything you've written.
Okay, so we can change professionals to volunteers and then strike that we'll never allow animosities or friendships to influence. Just delete the personal feelings.
Yeah, I think a person should be able to have their feelings about an issue.
Yeah.
As an example of when I was talking to the officer earlier, I feel really bad about the animal that got shot. Well, it didn't mitigate what had happened with all the effort that you had done. But I still sometimes will have a personal feeling and a gut feeling of how I would do that. And that's why, but when we talked before and everything else, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. So can we vote to adopt based on that? And then I can just send over the edited version. Okay.
Yeah, we'll just propose the motion with the edit this and the edit that.
Yeah.
Okay. And we should ask Tara if she has any comments, questions, or opinions, or something she wants to say at this point. Tara?
No comment for me. Sounds good.
If I can add also just one more comment. The reason I was asking the question about this and everyone need to be here was just to make sure, I wanted to make sure they will also then adopt it, even if they're not here. That was my question. But I would like to adopt it and then make it, you know, communicate it to them, basically that, okay, we voted on it, now everyone is accountable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, and it coincides with what the county's been trying to do as of recently.
Yes.
And that's my point.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to ignore your concern about maybe a larger board decision would be important. But if we're okay, I'm okay with getting things accomplished today because things have been pushed down the line and so on. All right, so at this point, if somebody would like to make a motion, we can vote on that.
I'm sorry to bother about the professional. I wonder if we should just say members just because.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'm not attached to it.
So that is just included in your motion that we have vote to approve or the ethics with these two changes.
Yeah.
And you said members? Members, okay.
Or maybe I can share, but I think that's what it's called.
I think that's what we're called.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what we're called.
So I propose a motion to adopt the code of ethics proposed with the date of 7/18/2024 with two changes. The first one, changing the word professionals, replacing it with members. And the second one on number two, to remove personal feelings.
Is it appropriate for me to second? Okay. So I'll
second. Yes, you can.
Okay.
All right. So the motion is on the floor to adopt the code of ethics with the two changes, changing the word professionals to members and removing the word personal feelings from the document. All in favor, say aye.
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 That's it. Thank you. And thank you for being patient with me to cover what I thought she wanted, really wanted. Next is Kyle and Jennifer's terms. We have renewed with people in the past, like Donna said, when there were no other applicants. In this situation, we would have to, Donna, I understand from what you said earlier, that we'd have to have them be a part of the applicants that we visit with. We have knowledge of their performance and what they've done. I personally don't need to interview them.
Interviewing them is not the issue. We have two expired terms, which are now considered currently expired. And so currently, Jen and Kyle don't have any standing on this board because their term has expired and there's no, their term has expired. We went through an advertisement for board members with a deadline of, I think, June 1st. When I realized that we hadn't received application from Jen or Kyle, I made it clear that I think that that would be the appropriate thing to do, considering their term was expired, as a technicality or formality. Even to just say, I'm interested in renewing my term, or here, I actually sent them the application and said, can you fill this out as so that we have our bases covered? I didn't receive any response to that request. And I was asked by the council's office, the manager's office, to forward all of the applications that I had to them. And then I basically, what I said was, is, well, what we did last time was we interviewed people and we made a recommendation to the county manager, the advisory board, not me, but the advisory board. And that's why I had them sent them on. And that was what we were planning to do. And then right now, everything is at a standstill because we haven't had a meeting. We haven't had any requests to meet earlier to maybe interview and select people prior to this meeting. I would encourage that we do that so that they're in place for the next meeting. And that is where we're at.
So we're just in a position where we have to take the applications that are in front of us. We have to discuss them or not, right? And make a recommendation to you, ranking that. Oh, no, we're going to interview.
Right. So I think that's what you need to decide is how you would like to move forward with the filling of the vacancies. Mm-hmm. And whether you want to do a ranking and a recommendation without meeting them, which is not how we did it last time, or you did it last time. We have more people than we have spots, and do you want to do an interview process and then make a recommendation? Mm-hmm. That is your decision to make as consensus as a group. Mm-hmm. I would recommend I just assumed we would do it like we did it last time, mm-hmm. but yeah. It's actually not required to be done that way. Mm-hmm. I think we thought it was a good idea, and that was my suggestion at the time, and I still think it's a good idea, but it's certainly not required.
And then the recommendations that we make, they go to the county manager, and that person makes the ultimate decision.
Manager makes the selection.
Okay.
And part of knowing how busy she is, recommendations would be probably helpful.
Yeah. So yeah, I would love to meet all six of them. That way we can ask them the same questions. And I don't know if they have to come in person, if it's because it's always just a short time. If they do it virtually with, like last time, I think some people did it over the phone. I would be personally fine with that. I don't know that people have to come in person for 10 minutes if they can't.
You could do a separate, just one single item, separate meeting where you do it virtually. And it's like a job interview. We do them all the time at the county where we set up virtual job interviews. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just like that. Yeah. We can do it on Teams. Mm-hmm. You can have a list of questions. I would encourage you to come up with whatever those questions are ahead of time, mm-hmm. and be consistent, and then get to know the people that are wanting to volunteer their time.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a good way to go at it.
And I agree with that.
Virtually would be fine. I'd be fine doing a virtual.
It might be easier instead of trying to get everybody together. It's just more convenient that way.
Would we need to schedule those, or would that be something that you could assist us with?
Jackie can certainly coordinate and help with that.
Because I know we had these emails before with us going back and forth between dates. I would like the advisor board to pick a date that you can all meet and then meet your schedules.
Okay.
And then I can call the applicant and say, are you available for this day for it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I personally don't want to do online. I went through that process before and it didn't feel anywhere near as important to me as being in the room with the person. Even from the other side.
You could do a hybrid where you can require those folks to come in. I think it's more of an expectation. I think you would have less resistance from potential interviewees coming in person than you would for basically availability of potential board members who are busy. I would like to accommodate board members who would like to do it virtually versus in person. Because when we did it last time, there were people in a room. You were there, Kyle, people were there. And then we had a couple people that were virtual. I'm sure, to listen to their interview, but you got to meet them in person. So asking the interviewee to come in person is completely fine. And I think everybody would almost be receptive to that. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, I think it's incumbent to accommodate because the county's really big.
Yeah.
Even to, I mean, we recommend accommodation virtually, given the world that we live in and the changes that have been made. There's an expectation that it's easy to do.
So do we give them the opportunity to come in one day, like you can come in on this day in person, or you can join us this day virtually?
No, I think you say, this is the day we're doing it. We expect you to be there. If you're unable to make it in person, please let us know. We'll make the arrangements.
Okay.
And then that goes for the board members as well, because maybe Tara wants to do it virtually. Or somebody else is maybe not under the weather, but they want to do it virtually. I think they're keeping with trying to accomplish what you want to accomplish. I think there's some level of accommodation that should happen. I would encourage it, but I agree with you 100%. I would prefer to interview people in person. That's my preference. That's my personal preference. But I've done a lot of job interviews virtually.
As how much notice would we need to give the folks before, you know?
I think the hardest thing is going to be coming up with dates and times that work for the board, and then, you know, you're probably going to be a couple of weeks out, and a couple of weeks is fine.
If we're going to do a hybrid, I will have to book the room depending on where we're doing it. Right. Well, I'll need time for that.
Well, I'd like to propose that we come up with a date that works for all four of us now. If you have your calendar with you, so we lock it in and with your approval as well. And if they can come in, great. If they want to add it in online, we can make that happen according to your two schedules. That's okay.
And are you able to see if there's a room like right now?
Or I don't have access to this building's calendars. I can't see it. I'll have to tomorrow email and make sure it's available.
So should we give a few dates so that you can see which one works? With the room? Okay.
Yeah. And this particular room, this belongs to the sheriff. So we've gotten kicked out of this room even when you scheduled it. So
yes.
They get priority. And I know the last one we did, we actually did it downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an option there too. We have meeting spaces downtown. We actually have meeting spaces in our Dolly building in the conference room. Mm-hmm. We have space here. So
we could do it in the conference room.
Yeah. So we'll figure out something for sure. The hardest part is getting people to agree to a date and a time, or at least a couple dates and times.
Yeah.
And I do not have to be there, so I just want to make that clear. It's not dependent on my schedule. I don't make any decisions in this process. It is the board's recommendation that we'll go forward. So I can be taken out of that equation. If I'm available, I can sit in, but it's not something I need to necessarily. I would like to just encourage that you have a set of questions, that there's consensus on those questions, and that those questions are asked universally across all kids.
Do you have a recommendation for a number of questions?
It would be, I would say that most interviews are anywhere between 20 and 40 minutes. I wouldn't recommend 40. I would say you could probably 20 minutes, maybe that's four questions. You know, and then there's enough time at the beginning for some introduction, and then there's some time at the end for if they had questions.
Okay.
So four good questions that's just a recommendation.
See, when they did my interview, I believe they had five questions, and they asked, is there something that you'd like to add, which actually made a sixth one. So
yeah.
That felt very comfortable. I think mine was 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure they had others they were doing the same time. So I'm not sure exactly who was on.
So remember, 30 minutes, if you do 30 minutes or you do 25 minutes or whatever, you know, you got to have a gap in between. You want to make sure somebody's keeping track of time to keep it fair. You don't want somebody talking 40 minutes and nobody else got that amount of time. I mean, it's just generally speaking. And so you want to plan for that. So if you have six people at 30 minutes each and the breaks in between, just that's a day or two-thirds of a day or whatever that might look like.
Yeah.
And depending on when you start, you don't have to do them all in one day. You could also break it up between 2 days, just, you know, whatever works and gets the job done.
And people have been waiting, so I would like to encourage us to do it as soon as possible.
I would agree with that.
I threw out a couple of dates earlier, like next Thursday, because we're used to meeting on Thursday, mm-hmm. or Saturday afternoon, if somebody wants to do that as well. I don't want you to have to come. I don't work any longer, so I don't have to worry about the day of the week. So I just propose those for people who want a weekday or a weekend. Mm-hmm. And I suggest a weekday would be in the evening. Weekday, weekend could be afternoon or.
Well, and if we're going to need your presence for it, we need to also figure out what your schedule is.
I'm not available on this, not this weekend, but the weekend after. I'll just put it that way. You're going to plan a Saturday.
So we prefer for my staff not to have to work on the weekend.
Yeah. So would you, what about a week from now or 2 weeks from now?
Yeah, I'm good. That's either the 1st or the 8th, and I'm available.
I'd be willing to come both times if people wanted to choose one or the other two. If that makes it simple, we'd have shorter. We just come in and do 2 or 3 interviews. We might have 4 each night. We might have 8.
So I think that's a good idea. If she can reach out to applicants and say you have a choice of this day or this day, and then you can kind of see where people fall. And because, you know, somebody might have plans already next week, but
right.
maybe not in 2 weeks.
Correct.
So we'll aim for the 1st and the 8th.
Can we try for those two?
Yeah.
And then we'll work around your schedule, because we don't want you to have to work evenings. We don't have to keep it as short as possible for you. And if you want to do all the online ones on the 1st one or the 2nd one, if we did it on 2 different days, then you only have to come one time, as long as they let us in the room to do the interviews.
So I think if we're going to do 2 different days, it'll have to be the Dolly Building, and someone will have to be present because it's locked, because they're doing construction. So I can be there.
Can we just try for one and provide a time frame that's, I guess yes. It depends what you do when you contact the people.
Yeah.
There might be people that have, their interest might have waned.
Especially if you say, we'd like to call you in for an interview.
Yeah.
Because you're one of the people you want to consider, then they might be more apt to come
and
in.
And you have to also remember, too, this is the time of vacation.
Correct.
So if neither one of those dates work, then maybe we can try to be accommodating to do a virtual or some sort of, we'll cross that. It's a lot of coordination. I know it takes a lot of time and effort when we schedule job interviews for folks. So we'll do our best and we'll come up with something. And if we run into a hiccup, we will communicate that and ask for your input on how to proceed.
Quick question. Thursday evening, for me, I work 7 to 4, so evening is 4 p.m. to me.
Yes.
Does 4 p.m. start time work?
For
me, it works for me as well.
Okay. Tara, does that work for you?
I'm available.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So I'll shoot for as many on Thursday, this upcoming Thursday,
yes.
as possible. And then any...
Can I ask if there's anybody available earlier than 4 p.m.?
I am.
I could do after 2:30.
After 2:30?
Okay, so maybe try 3. That'll help.
Does 3 p.m. work, Tara?
Yes, I can make arrangements for 3.
Okay.
If it's for me virtually, 3.
Yes, that works.
Yes.
Okay, 3 p.m. Thursday will start.
Okay, so then we can address the applicants at that time. Next is the new licensing software.
I talked about that a little bit earlier. I don't really have a whole lot to add. I'm super excited that we had funding approved. And once we had that approved, we were able to then just really kind of start the process, which we've been waiting to do. So the part was really waiting for the fund. It took a while for it to get to council. Council's been very busy, and what a lot of people don't realize is that their agendas fill up with county business in advance. And so they can only get so much done in when they meet at public hearings and all of that. So our time is limited, and we're in a line behind everybody else who has asked for something.
And so it took a hot minute to get on the agenda. And they asked good questions in terms of, you know, how did we arrive at it? Did we look at anything else? You know, are we getting the good deal? You know, all the things that they should be asking, and we were, you know, prepared, and the IT team was prepared to answer. So we're excited. We've been working with the company. Like I said, we had a kickoff meeting, our first kickoff meeting last week, and we're just in the process of providing them data and information so that they can build a system that works for us. Then we got to test it, and then we have to implement it. So, and then we have to work with our licensing agents as well. And then we really, really, really need to do some sort of a licensing campaign push once we have a good system in place that's reliable and is working well. We'll have some more online potential options for payments, which will be exciting for people. So I will be relying on this board to fulfill one of the missions that are in your bylaws, which is supporting the licensing of pets. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that looks like, but, you know.
Robert and I have some things to talk about here in the next season, down the road.
Any help, any ideas, I'm open. My PIO office is on alert that we need to do this and what that's going to look like, because there's obviously rules on you know, how we message things.
How many licensing agents are there currently,
Jackie?
It's a small handful. It's like 3 or 4.
Okay.
One stop, and they're interested to start again, so that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
So I think, speaking of that, so there's two things. One, our process is very antiquated, and they don't, some people don't think, because of the way we have to do it, it's not worth their time and energy and effort to do it. So they don't, or they've stopped. Number two, they just would like maybe an easier way. And then the rabies vaccination requirement is going to play into, because what the law says is that, hey, med vet or whatever, you need to, or at your local vet, you have to provide Clark County with information on the animal and the owner, so that we can reach out, so we can document it, put it in our database, the rabies information, and then reach out to them if their pets are not licensed. The law says you have to do that. In lieu of doing that, you can become a licensing agent. So if you're not comfortable providing that information, guess what? You are now required, mandatory, to license that pet on your own. And so we anticipate that we may have to, you know, there would be more licensing agents. And with a system that is designed for that, it'll be so much easier.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why we haven't rolled anything out yet, because we're anticipating the new software and we didn't want to dump a bunch of data into an old system that's going to crash and we wouldn't be able to retrieve it, and then we would have to transfer it. So anyway, my daughter's here. I have to give her my keys.
So next, if there is any questions or any comments anyone would like to make before.
Call number 4.
Okay, so next on our agenda is the COVID project in Saugus. Does that mean that?
So a few of us have been meeting to see what we can change in the code to help reach our goals of helping the animals and also allowing team to be able to help animals in a more efficient way. So there's 6 propositions. The first one I'm presenting is on behalf of Tara, who is not here, Tara Ampas. So the reason why here
we want... Which was Tara?
So I will just explain each time, like, why are we thinking of changing that?
what kind of examples have we found around Washington State, whenever possible, or maybe sometimes in other places? And then what is the proposed change? So for the first one, Tara was saying that she knows that some farm dogs are sometimes, you know, barking because they're protecting their livestock, and that does cause problem as the city and houses, urban cities, moving closer to farms, and these animals should be allowed to do their job and bark when they see something. And so in order to avoid the confusion there, because they are barking for different reasons when they're doing their job, we could consider changing the wording in the nuances section, that noises made by livestock or livestock guard dogs would be added, so that they're also included in that exception that they do bark because they're doing their job to alert or to defend the animals. I'm open for comments, changes, thoughts.
I have some thoughts, but I also don't have like a huge opposition to this. I live in the country, and I have a neighbor across the canyon who has a dog that I have no idea if it's alive, if it's a livestock, if it's a working dog, that probably around 10 o'clock every night, I'm thinking, oh, they let him out. They let him out, and then they let him out for a long time. And the dog, I think it's barking at the deer. That's okay. Because I don't, you know, the property is kind of in the canyon. There's lots of trees and everything. And bark, 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 bark. A good hour and a half, 2 hours. You know, I'm not, again, I'm going to have to go drive and find. I just don't. I'm just like, oh. Mm-hmm. And I deal with it, right? How to make this exemption, how complicated will it be for enforcement when you start looking at like if my dog barks forever, can I just say, you know what, it's a working dog?
So
right, it's guarding my cat.
I'd like to address your question and ask a question. The intent was, if an officer went out to on a report and they were dealing with that, the owner would have to say it's a working dog and try to provide evidence of that. The question I had for Officer Leslie is distance a factor for barking? Because the dog could be X distance away. At what point is it's considered, yes, I can hear it, it's over here, because you brought that to our attention.
Yeah.
Or is it just have to be in the vicinity of your home kind of thing?
As of right now, there's no contingency for distance. However, like it's something where if it becomes a nuisance and it's reported and we have evidence of it, that is where we would then be writing the citations. We don't have anything solidified in code for distance. We don't have anything solidified on what specifically defines whether or not it's an annoying or a nuisance or anything. Like a lot of these noise nuisance complaints that we get, we usually only get from one person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where we try to do the best we can with filtering through some of these with the noise nuisance process. However, if we are given adequate adequate evidence, we are supposed to be writing citations. And just know, every officer listens to every recording for its entirety for these violations. So we are in true listening to, I mean, I've listened to 3+ hours of barking evidence before and did not find a violation. So we are really going in and making sure that there is a violation.
So would this language help you when you're going out into the field? Like if you go, you know, if you go to, you get a call, there's a dog barking, it's the neighbor. You go to the neighbor, the neighbor's like, it's my Pyrenees, there's my goats, he's doing his job. You go back to the original, the person who made the complaint, and tell them, there's nothing we can do because that dog, there's an exception for that dog doing his job. I mean, I want them to do their jobs. I don't want anybody getting hurt. I just don't, is this going to make?
I would find that if we don't have a definition for livestock guardian dog, someone will get a chihuahua and say their barking chihuahua is a livestock guardian dog.
That's exactly
right. Or their beagle is a livestock guardian dog. Without a definition, it becomes.
Where somebody just goes and buys the chicken and sticks it in the backyard.
Yeah.
In an urban lot and says they're guarding my chicken. This is why words, definitions, and code is tricky and it matters. I'm a big believer in not creating code you can't enforce, not creating code that's ambiguous, not creating code that's needed just to say something that isn't a problem, right? I have an example for you. I mean, we had rural properties, 5 acres each. And where does everybody build? They build at the end, at the closest part of their cul-de-sac. They don't have long driveways and they're out in the middle of the woods. So they're all clustered around their water lines, their power lines, because it's very expensive to pull all those things out. So everybody's homes are next to each other, even in rural 5-acre parcels in some cases. And we have 3 dogs that constantly bark. And we're constantly getting complaints from both of the other neighbors in this 3-person cul-de-sac. And they're livestock dogs. They're a breed of livestock dog, but what livestock are they guarding? Right? Maybe they're not. Maybe they just have a couple chickens. And is that truly livestock guarding? I'm not talking about, like, Tara has sheep, herds of sheep, and people have herds of animals where these dogs are working and protecting them at night from the coyotes and all of that. And in those cases, we use our judgment and we say, they're doing their job. This isn't a barking nuisance. They're doing their job. Now, anybody can sue anybody for a private nuisance, and people are welcome to do that to show that they are negatively being impacted by somebody else's behavior. And a judge will decide whether that's reasonable or not. But I can tell you that barking complaints in general are a very low priority for us. In general, I'm not saying all, but in general, because we're responding to cruelty, bites, vicious behavior. That's my opinion.
So you're not seeing a ton of these types of complaints.
I would say, based off of officer judgment, we can tell when the wool is being pulled over our eyes, and we tend to not write citations or anything for true livestock guardian dogs. Also, when you have true livestock guardian dogs, they tend to not bark in excess of the ordinance. Yeah. They tend not to need to.
I've never known guardian dog to be barky. Right, they're not barky dogs. They'll respond if there's like a threat, but they're not going to just bark at the wind.
The only ordinance I say that they might come into violation of is the intermittent for 30 minutes in a 24-hour period. Mm-hmm. You usually don't get them barking for over 10 minutes. And that kind of evidence is not commonly what we write citations for, because nobody sends us that kind of evidence 9 times out of 10.
And I'm not saying that the language isn't, you know, we couldn't do something. I think it would need to be further defined as to what a livestock guard dog is, and what livestock is. Because we have a definition of livestock,
right?
And I don't need a parent, you know, we're not guarding them. Chicken coop.
Yeah.
Right. Necessarily.
So it's almost like this would need a definition, and then it would need a further sort of like a tie to that livestock would need to be actually present there, right? That there would be livestock by this definition would need to be present with this animal for it to be considered and there's breeds. I mean, most people don't get you could just say, like, this is the breed set that is considered a livestock dog. I mean, if you want to delve into this, if it's enough of an issue,
right?
that if, you know, I feel like if animal control is seeing this to where like this is a problem, but if it's, you know, if it's a problem, let's solve it. If it's not a problem, then we don't solve it because it's not a problem.
I have not come across this problem in my 2 years working, well, approximately 2 years. Yeah. I can share all that with Tara, and I know obviously there's the recording too, and then we can see for the next meeting what we want to propose.
But because she might be experiencing something that we're not aware, like she might be getting complaints from her neighbors, right, mm-hmm. that are not necessarily calling in, and they're saying like, ah, oh, your dang dog, and this type of a change would certainly give her, or and people like her, that, you know, sort of like support to say, I'm not breaking the law off my property.
So are you suggesting that you take this and hold this for a future, and after you have some chance to do some more?
Yeah, I think so, like to see if she wants to propose a definition so that we can then vote on it, I guess, at the next meeting. That's still sufficient time, right?
Oh no, actually it's not. What you could do is you can just take the general discussion feedback, share it with your committee, and then propose, either decide, okay, we're not going to move forward with this, we can't really come to some good idea, or propose something different that maybe we could, you know, find some consensus with. Or you wait until this is not a problem now, maybe we look into this, we do some research, what are some other jurisdictions doing, and then you bring it back next cycle.
Okay.
You can do that too. So you have like three options for that. But I would really need to have, if you really want me to get it into this code cycle, or I'm going to say whether I think this is a good idea or not based on my experience. But I would need to have those suggestions probably no later than the end of August.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for these suggestions, do we have to vote on them, or is it you were able to bring your own suggestions anyway?
I do have some of my own suggestions, and I'll talk about those. So I'm going to be bringing forth some ideas of my own, and I will ask the advisory board what they think and if they're supportive. It's always nice to be able to go to the council and say this was reviewed by the Animal Control Advisory Board as well.
Yeah.
It's not required, but I did it last time and I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
And I get so busy with things that I have staff bring me changes, I have the hearings examiner recommends code changes. That's where they come from. And then we have this particular opportunity where we have an advisory board who has some ideas of their own. So, you know, and maybe we have 20 ideas, but I'm only going to move forward with half of those this time.
We've discussed that in the past because we're dealing with a different level above us, and we have to try to prioritize.
Right. And I want to be successful. I don't want to overwhelm, and I don't want to create problems where there aren't any.
Yeah.
And I want to be successful with some specific changes as well. So
by, you said by end of August. So.
Yeah. Sure. I would before the 22nd, because I'm leaving the last week of August. So let's just say August 20th. So a little over 3 weeks.
Okay. So we can bring some recommendation from the committee without having to approve by the board to present them to you. Is that right?
I think as a committee, you come up with a suggestion, and then we can have a discussion on email. Here's our draft document, and I can reply to it and say, I don't recommend this. I'm not moving forward with this. I'm going to save this for next time. And then I'm going to share my ideas too. So we can do that. I think last time we were able to get away with, because we were behind in the cycle and we did it in October, and maybe we'll get lucky, and if that's the way it's going, we can maybe do that again. But it's also something that we can do via email in between. So
sounds good. Yeah, so we have some time. I'll talk with Tara more.
And then, you know, again, as we improve on this process as we move forward, we know that we really need to have this discussion in early January.
Yeah.
To start
I mean, I would have a better idea maybe in April. I want to have something really finalized by July.
I like that. I agree.
Yeah.
We'll have more meetings, Tara.
Right, yeah, there's that too. I like the idea of a subcommittee for code changes because you literally cannot get it done in quarterly. You try and shove it. I mean, we're already at 2 hours.
Yes. The next one is about an idea that might be controversial of making it mandatory to spay and neuter the animal, which would help reduce the population of homeless and stray cats, but also in general the population, which obviously the numbers are showing. The amount of work is just crazy how it's increasing, and there's not really, the resources are not coming at the same time, so maybe we can do the other way by reducing the flow of animals. And then allowing obviously better care for all these animals, right, with the current resources, which are reduced, right, there's not enough vets, and the staff could always use more help. I know that too. So here an example was from King County, Washington. They called it the Mandatory Spay and Neuter Program. I put the text in there, and I just basically in the bottom copy pasted the ABCs into our section of the code that says spaying and neutering is encouraged, and I just would propose to change it to mandatory. And then in the King County, they called non-juvenile what we defined as adult in our code, so I just changed that. But that obviously comes with a whole process that we need to be developed on how do we check that they are spayed and neutered, and also what are the exceptions, how do we allow some entities like breeders potentially to then need like a license or something of some kind. So it's not a small project. I know that, but I wanted to see with the board and the staff if that might be something that could help.
We actually talked about this at staff meeting today at Great Line about mandatory spaying. We have a really bad stray cat problem here. And the same things we talked about, like breeders. I mean, there are reputable breeders that you know will breed a certain breed of cat, and how do we accommodate that? I don't know that I think this is a big ask, and it may not be appropriate for the biennial code amendment, which is just supposed to be some minor code revisions.
Okay.
This would maybe require, we can do that anytime. I can ask the board to do anything at any time as long as I get on the calendar.
Okay.
For a major code change, which I would consider this not a code amendment per se, not necessarily, depending, because you, like you said, it could be controversial to require mandatory. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? Right? We're not lifting up the skirts of the animals and checking. We're not doing that. But maybe it's enough to put it in code, kind of like the rabies vaccination where the vets are required, you know.
Well, when they always, you know, usually vets will issue a spay and neuter certificate, right? Some kind of documentation. You know, I agree with you. I think that this, I love it.
Yeah,
I just love
it.
I just love it.
You're dealing with this growing. Yes.
But the put almost any time that I've bumped into this type of legislation in any community, the first people that come after it is going to be the breeders, the AKC. AKC, like, they have a group of people that are just, they just stand by just when they see stuff like, so it's almost like make really bolstering this and making sure that it is such a solid argument. And I think we have a great argument. Where I think there might be a challenge is because it's so expensive, right? So there's going to be people that are going to say, well, I can't comply because I can't afford it. Yeah. So then where does that sort of leave everybody? And, you know, it's like, I know that there's, you know, like Furry Friends, they're getting ready to open a clinic. You've got West Columbia Gorge, they're trying to do something with offering low cost to the public. They're trying to work through their legal. And then you have Humane Society has like a little van that they're trying to get into play. So those, when those things are up and going, people will have an option. But until then, like, it could be really problematic, just enforcement alone, because again, if people can't afford it, then what's the remedy? I would love to, I'm going to come to your next meeting, because I would love to, like, figure out, and you know, and you can do work in advance of a law like this, of a code change like this, of like, get your community on board in advance by doing a campaign.
You have to tell a story as to why it's a problem.
Yeah.
And that problem ranges anywhere from the cost to the taxpayer, to health issues, to, you know, neglect, all the things.
Yeah, you can frame, there's so many things that you can put in that frame to really, like, to back up this argument of why it needs to be mandatory.
And wouldn't I love to have people have a successful licensing campaign where the animals are actually being licensed and I have extra money. And that money goes towards, you know, like what King County might do with a regional agency where you issue a voucher. Now, again, that doesn't solve the problem if it takes even 9 months or 12 months to get into a vet to get us by over here. That's a different problem, and I got too much of a thing. I can't solve that problem, right? But it is a problem.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But so, you know what? This is a good starting point to start that discussion, to start breaking it down, you know. So I think this is really incredible.
I would love it.
On rabies certificates, it designates whether or not a dog is spared.
They'll do tattoos, like, you know, a lot of times, that, especially in the little snippy ones, they'll do a little ID tattoo
really
on your belly.
Not anymore. Cats, you'll see
the ear tip.
Mainly tattoos are done in the South, but it's not done, really done in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, they've been doing it to mine. Well, Orchard Hills.
Every vet has their own.
Yeah, name. And I only use a couple of vets. So.
Veterinarians before animal control, and none of them did.
Oh, okay.
So it's not as common.
But is that something that would be? Well, that's part of the discussion.
That's part of the discussion. Yeah. Okay. Like, how do we identify? Like I said,
I'm not checking the skirt of a feral cat. I'm sorry.
I do not blame you.
Right. So I love the idea. I think that this one, we need, there's a lot of work that's going to go into helping to make that successful. I also think that with everybody's costs that are increasing, like the Humane Society's costs, the veterinarian costs, all the costs that are laying into helping people, the legislators recognize there is a problem in the community with strays. The more momentum we'll get to making radical or bold changes in like this. Mm-hmm. So it is definitely something on the radar, and something if we move forward with and do well, we can make a difference. I read a study today, actually. It takes a 12-year study done by, I can't remember what college program, on trap neuter release, that in order for a TNR program to be successful, you have to spay 70% of that population.
Yep,
70%. They happen around here. So, you know, that was shocking to me, the amount of work that has to be done to help that, for TNR to make a difference.
Yep.
So.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is.
That sounds like there's some good interest there. Yeah, we'll continue to dive into this. And what's the best process to discuss here, like the actual process of something like that? Like, and I know you're very busy, but as we continue then to brainstorm, it would be super helpful to get the people who work on these things to us.
Mm-hmm. I think that you need to, like Rebecca said, you have to carve something out for these breeders so that you give them what they need in order to continue to, and let's make an assumption that everybody's a good guy in that field. We know that's not the case, but let's go there. And what do we carve out for to address their concerns.
Yeah.
And I think you have to, otherwise you're gonna start with resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing, is that you either have to go at it like, okay, we're walking into, we're basically setting a confrontation up with them, and we have to have everything in our arsenal to be able to win that argument. With the breeders, there's no type of a breeding license that is required, right? And see,
yeah.
What's that?
We have a kennel license requirement for dogs, but that doesn't mean you're a breeder. It can just mean you're a private.
So see, that would be a good place to start, is that like, okay,
breeding does, if you have 3 or more litters in a year, that is considered a breeding, and that is a facility license. They should be licensed. They're not always, right, but they should be required. They are required.
So
for dogs.
So looking at that piece might be really beneficial to say, like, how can we maybe clean that up, to start with? That brings the breeders to the table, and then we can start kind of enrolling them in like this bigger problem. Because just like what we were talking about earlier with the, with saying like, okay, all of these calls that you're getting and all of the work that animal control is doing, where are those animals coming from, right? The breeders are just as responsible as the rescues. It's like, because again, they're born here, they're brought here. Yeah. That's it. And
I think you engage with the Humane Society and other rescue organizations that have a stake in, what they think, and because they're going to be your ally in that or support that, and they probably have ideas. They've probably done a bunch of research on your, we're just trying to keep our head above water responding, yes, to complaints. Mm-hmm. It goes back to who should be doing the work of some of this long-term community of change, mm-hmm, right? We're happy to support it in code, but you really need to have that. You need to have that support system in place in order for it to be.
Because they'll look at the breeders are going to look at that word mandatory, and they're going to consider that a gigantic thing. Mm-hmm. Even, and I get it. Like I said, I love it. I'm like, yes.
Mm-hmm. And maybe this will help us to get a veterinary or somebody like that to show the board, because that, I think, would, yes, be probably a topic that, mm-hmm, yeah, might be interesting.
Exactly.
So I have a donor.
I think you're on the right. I think it's the right direction to move into.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. And the next one is probably also quite controversial. It's to forbid elective animal alteration. Declawing could be potentially the first one to address, and then see if that one passes. We could add end ear cropping, tail docking, deparking. There's also ink piercing, coloring, all kinds of things that people do. Here, of course, is the fact that it is considered by many animal welfare organizations and veterinarians that it's inhumane to do these procedures that cause unnecessary pain and suffering. It also goes against nature. It can create long-term pain, trauma, physical issues like lameness, chronic pain, and behavioral issues. And there's also non-altering alternatives that people can do if they want to make their animals pretty, or if they want their animals to stop barking or clawing. It's a lot in the training, and there's toys and all kinds of things. So I put here the text from Tacoma, Washington, that just passed this declawing in December. And there's many states even that have declawing as illegal. The state of Washington, D.C., Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia. Except when it's considered a medical necessity by a licensed veterinarian. So at least we could try to do the CAD deploying, like copy-paste from Tacoma, or we could even add the other text in there that is from Animal Legal Defense Fund. That is a nonprofit that writes law to help protect animals. They have a very short version that just says, to remove or permanently alter, disable, or cause, or procure to remove, sorry, I'm not reading it very right, but they kind of put the whole thing of alterations in one or two sentences that I think is beautiful, if we wanted to try that one. But that, again, is a bigger ask and could be harder to.
Well, I feel like these things here, I look at this stuff as kind of low-hanging fruit, because most people, like, consider all of those things to be kind of cruel. Most people, not everybody, but most, I think most people. And I think that addressing, especially like when I was working over in Eastern Washington, there were people that veterinarians were happily piercing the ears of kittens. There was someone who had done a decorative tattoo on the neck of their pit bull. So that is right here in our state. So those things do happen. And to be able to, you know, it's sort of like you don't want all this crazy stuff to be happening and then have to respond. It's like if it's going to happen, you know, it's going to happen. It's better to have it in place. But again, is it one of those things that you feel would be, I mean, I like this, you know, this basic statement that kind of covers a lot of things. The one from the Legal Defense Fund, they, you know, that language is, and I don't think you're going to get, I don't think you get tons of pushback. You might get pushback from the groomers about the coloring, because I know a lot of them like to do their little pink poodle hairs or something that, and then, you know, you're talking aesthetics for the ear cropping and the tail docking, like those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think those are easy things because it's been so heavily documented about what it does to the animal, what the process is, how painful the recovery is, and what it actually gets, you know.
So here's my thought on this, and I'm supportive of it, obviously. I'm just like you said, most people would be like, yeah, that's cruel and unusual. We don't want that to happen. What does enforcement look like?
Yeah.
Right. What what does that do to, you know, our increased complaints that we get that somebody pierced a kitten's ear? And are we ever going to be able to see it? It's investigation time. What are we going to do? Are we going to issue a fine? What is the outcome of that?
Right.
Do they lose ownership because they did these things, or do they just get a fine? And to what end? So then I thought, I went back and I thought of something that happened in front of the Vancouver City Council, which was these proclamations that these animal support groups wanted to push through and put them for the council, like, outlawing faux bois, fur, and some other things. And they did it in a way that was a proclamation that the county supports humane treatment of animals, and as a result, whereas this, that, whereas, and
it's, oh, interesting,
you know, and you go before, you propose that as a proclamation, and the council as a county government supports that, and it's not in code that requires us necessarily. I mean, we could get a cruelty complaint and say somebody tattooed the neck of their pit bull, and we could easily equate that to being cruel.
Okay.
And we could pursue it that way, right? But we don't get a lot of those, right?
I have not seen anything like that specifically, no.
Oh, so glad.
Here's an example of, do we need it to be in code? Can we do a proclamation that's supportive of, we do not encourage, we are against this? It is supported in a way by the current cruelty and neglect codes that are out there potentially, right? And if we see this becoming a problem or prolific in the future, we can then consider something a little bit more in code. Or when we have evolved and Animal Control grows into a bigger department with more people and more resources, we could do more things, right? So I immediately went to, you know, maybe it's this proclamation where we bring awareness and we have that political support, and you can do that with different things, and it could be all of it. It could be, you know, and I would encourage, if you go that route, that you are specifically calling out the tick clawing, the air cropping, the tail docking, the deep, I mean, you go into all of it because they have no clue, right? That these things could be happening and that they are considered. It's an education opportunity. And then you get, you know, it's in a public hearing and it gets posted and it's, you know, you could do it. I mean, are there any days of the year where it's National Animal Protection
Day? Yeah, there's all, there's so many
so
now.
Many of them, okay? So you could pick a day where something is being celebrated and then propose for a proclamation to be read on that day in conjunction with recognizing.
Oh, nice.
Right. Yeah. So I've seen that done a lot at public hearings. So it's just an idea. However, I am perfectly happy to take this forward as an Animal Advisory Board recommendation and see what happens.
I know for a fact that some people we talked with outside of this board also already saw issues with this. Some people who breed dogs want to do the clipping and tail docking. So yes. I know that it is the cruelty is happening right now and it is not seen as a cruelty.
Right.
And so I think that yeah, the person who might not even know that this is happening, if we talk about a proclamation but it's not enforceable, there might be, I don't know, a risk that then people are like, oh, I never heard of tattooing. Maybe I'm gonna go do it.
I don't want to put that in someone's mind.
Yeah, that's why I
didn't go there, but you know, that's a perfectly reasonable nexus to make, sure.
Right. And the two specific ones, you know, 8.11.070, subsection 1 and 2, both cover things that I would be able to articulate would be like the tattooing and all that. I could easily articulate that to be violations of those specific codes. Now, the other thing you got to think about is there an RCW that if this is occurring that I'm going to search warrant for?
Right.
Because there's, to my knowledge,
no,
there's not. So that's another thing that it would make it harder on us to enforce.
When I saw that over in Othello, I was looking for an RCW, like hoping that there was something and I couldn't find anything. And not to mention the veterinarian did it. So it wasn't even like someone doing it at home. They like took it to the vet to have it done. So I was like, huh. So I did file a thing with the vet board. I mean, that's all I could do is to just say, hey, you need to talk to your people. No, exactly.
Well, and I think I had asked the question when this came up originally, because we talked about the staff meeting is, and she's worked at the vet clinics, and I don't know that, do vets even do declawing anymore?
It is very, very hard to find a vet that'll declaw or debark because they are against it. Most veterinarians that I know of that do ear cropping or, you know, tail docking, they're doing it when these dogs are about 3 days old, and they are trained in it before they do it. There are a lot of things that can go wrong, which is why a veterinarian should do it. I would say maybe look into articulating that it should be done by a trained professional if it is to be done, because a lot of the issues and the cruel things that you would come across are going to be in the backyard breeders who don't go to a veterinarian for these procedures, and they're doing it home with a pair of scissors incorrectly where they can hit a nerve. And sometimes those nerves paralyze, you know, the dog's ability to control their bowels. And there's a lot of complications that can occur. And I do agree that if it's done incorrectly, it most definitely can be considered cruel. If done at a later stage in life, it most definitely can.
So to say, to go at it like, you know, like, oh, it needs to be done by a veterinarian.
Some of these things are breed standards. That if it is not done to their dog, it will hurt their ability to show and to be able to have the dog be seen in AKC, and be able, then that would then hurt their ability to make money off these dogs.
So now we're back to the breeders.
And so it's one of those things that it may not be quite as black and white.
as it appears to be. And I'm not for, I'm not 100% against if it's done humanely, because I've seen it done both ways. I've worked in vet clinics where tail docking is done and done humanely and correctly. Mm-hmm. And I personally did not have an issue with it, mm-hmm. Because of the way it was handled and the way it was done in a humane way, mm-hmm. not when the pups are multiple weeks old with a pair of kitchen scissors mm-hmm. at home. So, and I've seen dogs come in with those specific circumstances where mm-hmm. that was absolutely not okay. Mm-hmm.
The other thing was also, I know that there's, that you have the ability to see, you know, what's the code, what's happening now, but if we do put it in the code, it does impact also what the vets, like it strengthens the vets to say no. And
yes,
I don't know, like I know there's wiggle room in the code, but writing it down would long term make sure that it doesn't come back, because there's also trends, right? People might think it's not okay now, and then in 20 years they think it's okay again, which mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would still prefer in any case to write it down than have a proclamation, just because, yeah, right, proclamations could just be a press thing and then reusable.
Yeah, then I mean I like simple, mm-hmm. and if we're gonna do it, then I would recommend that you use the animal legal defense funds template. I think that would be my recommendation, because it's pretty straightforward and it's just one sentence.
Yeah.
So that's just how I would, you know. Yeah.
And then for the offense, I don't know if you would then be able to just propose something based on your expertise on what should happen there. Because the third offense, I'm not sure if we can use that term or if we just have to say what is the actual offense.
Because yeah, it's not an actual offense. Again, it goes back to, yeah, this I see where this language may have come in, and we want to go straight to a third offense, but you could also put a separate violation for you know, that particular violation itself, and just attach a penalty to it.
Yeah.
Right. So it is, you know, maybe it's $1,000, which is equal to a third offense. You just do it that.
I was also wondering about that, like, we don't have to talk too much more about this one, but I was thinking in the car, what would be an actual good number, because people who might be wealthy, they might then be like, oh, it just cost me $1,000 potentially that I do this.
We run into that all the time. So
yeah.
The code is, you know, you're gonna, the 20% of people who don't care, you're never going to write any code that's going to solve all problems. Mm-hmm. Same thing in code enforcement, we run into the same thing. We call it the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. Some people think that getting the fine is just the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
So you're never going to reach those people to do the right thing.
Mm-mm. It's hard.
So again, you know, it's here you have, you could maybe move it into thinking about your reach into the state legislature, right? Where it becomes an RCW and it becomes a felony, and get some momentum going in that regard. So there's other options as well when you start talking about some of these things.
Yeah. Since Tacoma passed it, I think there was another spoke. Which one? Yes, Spokane also passed something about deploying or is in the process of.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sometimes when there's a big three or so cities in one state, then it goes to the next level. So it could really impact
yeah.
a lot of animals.
Mm-hmm.
So go into the next one, please.
Mm-hmm. The next one is limiting the number of animals permitted per space. So this one could help potentially animals have more space and not have to live with others in a crowded environment. It should help people to understand what is an okay amount of pets in a house so that there's not the crowding issues or hoarding issues. Obviously, many animals like to run, cats and dogs and many others. There's also a study by Jeff Horn and his colleagues at the University of Illinois that said outdoor pets had an average home range of less than 2 acres. And then it should allow for better care of the animal population with the current reduced resources if I know it's maybe a long shot, but like I'm imagining that yes, there's people who don't border their cats or dogs, and they can hopefully take better care of these animals. So here there's Spokane County that has Suntex, SeaTac, Wenatchee. I also put a blog by a veterinarian in there that talks about what they think should be the square footage. And so the text so far that I proposed in there with the committee was maximum number of pets per indoor square footage, because if they're outdoor, usually they have a lot more space. So here's just, you know, an average based on all the research that it could help to say no person shall keep or maintain more than one pet over the age of 6 months, right, an adult, per indoor 200 square footage for longer period of time than 6 months, which that part helps to allow people who are breeding and have a ton, or not a ton, many babies. Obviously, then their number of animals per square footage goes up, but by 6 months, then these animals are adults, and then they're probably no longer there, so that should help with that. At any premises, including any dwelling units or any lot building structure, closure of premises. And then we could put an exception of the code does not apply to the animals under the care of an official facility, rescue, or sanctuary. And that was it for that one. So some cities have number of pet limits, and then others just go by
square footage. And we have a number of pets limitation and dogs in the county, right? Dogs only.
And then the city of Vancouver has something with cats. So cats are an issue with bordering, and there's no limits at the moment in our text.
So do you feel like the text that exists for dogs is sufficient or not really? Does this?
I think it's just that you have to have a facility that's over six, right? I don't think that that would be, I mean, it could help, I guess. Then people could just say, oh, I'm a rescue now, and then they continue.
Well, that's the note that I made here was that, you know, restriction under exceptions, the restriction in this section shall not apply to animals under the care of an official licensed facility, rescue, or sanctuary, because that's something on my list here as far as a potential revenue. Something that Robert and I touched on in our committee was the licensing factor for like facilities of like, you know, who's included in that.
So let's discuss that when we get to
that. Exactly.
But I'd like to have you do the last. Next week.
Defining appropriate care. So that one, Robert and I put some edits there. The first why is that some of the text doesn't allow for good enough minimum care. There's a lot of wiggle room. There's also a very short tethering. For example, California state law mandates that a tether must be at least 10 feet long or 5 times the length of a dog, and ours so far is at 3.
Can you pause for a second? Mm-hmm. And Donna, I've been working that with you since I got on the board. So we found that California had that limit.
I was going to say, that's new information.
I've been proposing 4 times, and then I found California says the minimum of 5, and so I included that change.
Yeah, and so best examples there to keep it simple, basically, Animal Legal Defense Fund has a very easy code that we could copy, but then that would change everything we already have written. So instead, we could just add sections, and then for the times, yeah, just a number change, right? It used to say 3, we would just set 5.
I know, we would love a minimum care. Especially solidified in an RCW that we have. I'm going to go back to that RCW. It was change made to a section, and it was poorly done, and it has ramifications for us. And I would encourage, you know, some also, this is another example of getting that fixed or getting some sort of minimum care standard that was in that code, that kind of got dropped from the code, that kind of got changed, probably unintentionally. And now it's creating some problems internally for us. So I know that there is a group that's working on it. In fact, I have notified the ALPF about it. It doesn't hurt to clarify our code, especially for abatement.
I really wanted the each of the J. I worked on that for a long time with Lissandra as well. And we added the I in the middle of that because of the needs of cats, the population explosion. So we thought we would look at and include something about that. I don't have any knowledge of cats. I apologize for that. But she was able to find that piece as well. But the H and I thought was really important because it allows you to use your judgment as an officer the way it's worded. So you can check out the welfare of the animal. It gives a standard base of care.
I will say I have three cats of my own. I don't clean my cat litter box daily, but it also does not build up past the point of where I would consider it cool.
And I don't know that, but so I'm sure you found that. And, mm-hmm. I think that if you guys could come with a wording, I'd be totally appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to accept that. I don't have a cat. I had a cat for a month once, a long time ago. So, the idea is to provide the basic care for animals that you can use in code.
I have a litter robot.
Yeah, a litter robot?
Oh my God.
For like a last money, we put it in a bag.
Really?
It's very expensive. It's a self-cleaning. It's like a big cement mixer, and it turns and then sifts it, and all the waste gets dropped.
And we just pull out of the drawer and tie up the bag.
Oh my gosh, that sounds delightful.
It's great if my cats
love it. I don't know why I waited so long to buy one.
I have the one that breaks.
So we got the wording on the scrub, I think you call it, can be changed, but needing a litter box and access to a clean litter box. That could be limited to the other wording that if you'd like to drop that.
Yeah. I think you'd probably be more successful in deleting the last part of that sentence because somebody's going to look at that and say, well, first of all, I'm not counting it. I'm never going to see the litter box. And so, people are going to let me in to see the litter box anymore.
After the word litter box.
There's a real issue there. Right. Like, when we go in and we see the litter box, usually it's when we're actually in those, we're way past them just using a litter box.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So and it's kind of like
if you go back to the word sanitary, that's where that officer discretion comes in to be able to apply the word sanitary to not having a clean litter box.
So changing the wording to in case of cats or other animals need a litter box, access to a sanitary litter box.
Yeah, and I'm even saying that you could incorporate, I have to take a look at it, but I think there's a different, a better way to incorporate that into without being super specific.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I go back to that whole super specific is sometimes not always your friend. Yeah.
That's why H and J were so worded the way you see it.
Yeah.
That's it. So if there's one more, I've been working on the barking thing because you guys, it's low priority on barking. So I wanted to extend the time, like 4 meetings in a row. And I changed it to 2 or more hours on 2 days within the same week. That means you don't have to go out there with a stopwatch and count 10 minutes because it wastes your time going out there. Usually when I'm seeing this, when I talk to people, it's because the people left the dog in the backyard for the weekend. And they did during their vacation. And then the rest 350 days a year, they're totally fine. So that's why I proposed this. It's similar to what I proposed in the past, more succinctly written. Gives you less to worry about because the person reads that, you can say, okay, well, he hasn't been going this length of time. But the old wording is 10 or more minutes. Any dog will bark at 10 minutes just because there's seagulls next door.
I will say it's 10 minutes of consistent barking. We sit there and like we have our timers out and any break more than 60 seconds, that timer stops and that timer starts again. And so we are very, very strict on that 10 minutes of continuous barking. the only thing I'm seeing with this is two or more hours. I'm listening to 4 hours of barking evidence. That's what I see when I see this.
So the wording actually did the opposite. It's trying to help you have less responses to the continual calls by one neighbor against the other neighbor because the dog barked for a while.
Some of the suggestions that I've heard or staff has suggested is that we're not going to, maybe we need not to respond to any barking complaint unless we have two or more complaining parties. So the one-off, you know, the one who just doesn't get along with the neighbor, it's just the one person. Maybe we need, in order to really consider it to be a nuisance, it has to affect more than one person. We kicked that idea around. We do something similar in urban livestock noise, where we have to have two complaining parties and we require them to go to mediation first. If mediation is not successful, then we can pursue a code violation.
And that's code enforcement.
There's code enforcement, but
you don't even need a time limit. We can remove that, just say, to be continuous noise, and then after that, get rid of everything that we set, and include by two complaints filed.
Yeah. Separate. So you'll see the code section right here, 4262.35. If you read that, that's where that comes from. Mm-hmm. And again, it was kind of like, you know, it was made to address that, again, the creeping city urban into the farmlands. So we have, you know, you have a 3-acre parcel in the middle of the subdivision. Those are the holdouts. They've been there forever. They're not selling, they're not subdividing, but they have they have chickens and goats and rabbits, and then the urban city moves into them. And it wasn't fair to say, oh, anybody can just complain. They have reduced setbacks to property lines that people don't have in the rural area to provide for the space, but you moved in on them. Mm-hmm. And so it now requires at least two adjacent, not people out that live out here, but our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And then it requires you to do mediation. If mediation isn't successful, then we'll come. So, and we've never done it.
So could we use that? I think that's very promising. And if we stopped at the word unreasonable degree, as reported by two adjacent neighbors, you don't have to deal with the time. You don't have to go out there for 2 hours or even 10 minutes. You got two different neighbors complaining about the same dog. You go out and talk to both neighbors and say, yes, this is the situation. And then you can have those people, those parties communicate with the owner in some way that you're talking about.
So what I don't want to have happen, I like the numerical standard, because what I don't want to have happen is somebody's dog barks for a minute and then two people get together because they don't like them, and then all of a sudden it's a problem. So I do think there needs to be a real time it limits somebody's ability to weaponize it, for lack of a better word.
That is to help you solve the problem and help neighbors work it out so that there's not a problem taking all your time. Because you're getting 500 calls a month that doesn't even relate to what you're doing. So that's the intent.
Well, we're not effectively enforcing it, which also is a disservice to the community, but I don't have a choice, right? I have limited ability. That's just the way that it is. But if there was something better that provided a better outcome that wasn't burdensome, then that's a win-win for everybody.
So you just change the wording that we suggested from 2 or more hours, 2 days a week, to as reported by 2 or more adjacent neighbors within the same week. But I like your idea better than mine.
Yeah. Let me go back and look at the section 40 and see how we can maybe reword that a little bit better. Yeah, so
I want to make your job easy. So you're out there and get the job accomplished, figure out how to solve the problem, and that might be your way to do it. And limit your time, because there's so many calls.
Yeah.
And my neighborhood, he was always yelling, that dog's barking. they're just neighbors arguing.
When we tried to change this, and then when we brought it forward, and they got really nervous because they wanted to make it more restrictive. And we were like, no, right. Okay, to go, you know. And so I think if we don't change the time, but we add the two, I think that sounds more reasonable. So, and I'm sorry I didn't think of that before.
I didn't think about it, and I appreciate your addition.
Yeah.
Cassandra, is anything else you want to add to it?
To that one, I was just wondering, what if there aren't two neighbors? I guess that would have to add some kind of.
No, if there's not two neighbors, it's there's no case to open. Nothing to investigate.
They live in this process that they have to follow. And the thing is most of the time when the reporting parties ask us, am I the only one reporting this?
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, the answer is yes.
Yeah. I mean, like if they live out of nowhere and there's just two houses, and so then there's only one neighbor physically who could even hear the nuisance, then how?
And if you have to prioritize, since I've been working on this,
and it could just be urban. I mean, maybe we could just limit it to urban. Like you need two in the urban area, and I mean, there's ways to kind of maybe address that issue.
Yeah. Just wanted to make sure. I guess I have all the next steps. So for the minimum care, it sounds like you might be proposing something then.
I like the idea of minimum care. So I will look at that and we'll talk about that and see what makes sense and what doesn't. I'm supportive of a better minimum care.
And you said earlier we might have to prioritize the different steps of introducing things. Mm-hmm. For me, and I'll let Sandra say for herself, the minimum care thing was very important for me.
I think for an example, I think your 10 times length and whatever the tether,
yes,
the California law. I think that's very simple. It's very succinct. It's very simple. I think that goes through pretty simply.
Yeah.
That's an example of a very benign code change that I don't think is going to have much opposition. Mm-hmm. So that one's easy. The other stuff is we'll look at the minimum care standards at what it says and say, okay, is this too out there or is this never been, or are there bits and pieces that we think we can, you know, get by.
Thank you.
Because we would love that. I mean, anything that is made more clear for minimum care standards seems is. Now our lawyers, like our lawyers have said to us before, having it in the RCW is better, but we can certainly, you know, move forward.
Sandra, is anything else you want to add to that?
And then the other one above, I don't think we had any next steps. Do you want me to pursue anything there, Donna, for the square footage thing? Or should we? I didn't hear any comments, so I wasn't sure if there's any.
Yeah, I think that one requires me to actually talk about that at staff meetings. It came up with the square footage thing and what does that look like and what makes sense. And we didn't really arrive at a consensus, but I would like to talk about it some more and see what makes sense. I love that you put in examples and that what other jurisdictions are doing. That is always very helpful. While we're on this topic, I know we've been going for a while. I want to just, in the spirit of being transparent, I have some code changes that I'm going to propose. Some of mine are just Scribner's. The RCW language doesn't match anymore with what's in code, and we'll just fix that. So that's benign. The big one, I think, for us is dangerous dogs and potentially dangerous dogs. We have a lot of, the way the code is currently written in the county is if a dog attacks chickens, then it can be declared dangerous. And what we're kind of hearing is that maybe that's not appropriate right off the bat. It is a burden to have a big dog that's declared dangerous. It costs money. You have to have a bond. You have to increase your insurance. You have to have an enclosure. You have to make all these things, right, that negatively financially impact people. And we have dogs that just have a high prey drive for chickens. And should they be labeled for the rest of their life because they killed their neighbor's, you know, a chicken that wandered in their yard or something like that, right? So we were thinking about the idea is that it's we kind of put that into the potentially dangerous category if they do that just for chickens. Not all dogs are bad that kill chickens, right? And then if they continue to do it,
then they're showing a propensity, mm-hmm. or if they escalate, then they're declared dangerous. So it's kind of giving some of
adding the, another one another.
It's just giving you giving the chicken killer a chance. Is it a one-off? Is it a propensity? But it is a big it's a big thing to declare a dog dangerous. It's a whole thing.
Well, yeah, I think it is too. You know, I think that it will also perhaps encourage people who have chickens to just be a little more. I mean, I almost got in a wreck trying to not hit some like buddy's couple of peahens that had like yeah. gone into the road. So it's sort of like they have a responsibility as well.
The people we also talked about livestock containment. So that was the other code section.
And do you, are chickens considered livestock?
They are.
They are. Okay.
Yeah. So I think we even talked about taking the word of non-domestic out. Or anyway, where that is the goal is to kind of give these dogs that would normally be declared dangerous on their first offense of killing a chicken to be potentially dangerous instead, and then we can move to dangerous. Later.
That can happen so fast. It happens so fast.
Well, really my dog would bring the chicken to me. Yeah. And yep. get a bunny from across our backyard, and she caught one a couple of years ago, and she brought it to me. If it got hurt, that was a chicken. Then the same thing. It's in a fence yard, but the idea is it can happen in a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very easy to kill a chicken. Our number of dangerous dogs, I will say the majority of the ones that have been declared in the last year and a half are chicken killers. And dangerous dog cases put a lot of strain on our resources and mm-hmm. following up, making ensuring compliance. And
so Donna, in that wording, can you retroactively remove dangerous dog from dogs that killed chickens in the past?
I don't know. I thought about commuting sentences. I haven't thought about that. I mean, not that there isn't. I'm not saying I haven't thought about it. I'm not sure how to deal with that in particular. Because we've cost these people. The code was the code, and we were enforcing the code, and we've cost these people money. And the last thing I want to do is say, oh, well, your sentence is commuted. We'll be like,
I want my money back.
Sure, I understand.
So I don't even know what that looks like. And that would, to me, that's a lawyer question. I would consult with my attorney about, you know, what, if we change this, what does this mean? What does this look like? So I don't think he has a problem with, yeah, you were doing what you were supposed to do under the code and you changed the code and you before, but I think that's at a point going forward. So, And then the other thing that we were considering is a suitable containment for livestock, because we are getting more instances of livestock running at large. And if we require a containment fencing, a proper enclosure, then we have that written in code, then that is something that we can write an abatement order to and or, you know, potential fines and penalties if they fail to contain their livestock. So, so that's pretty straightforward. So that's really
that all kind sounds of good.
And it's a result. These are exactly the results of the issues that we're having. We're running into livestock issues. We're running into, is it having questions about whether it's really fair to declare some of these dogs dangerous and the implications of doing so. And here, you know, we also hamstring the Humane Society when we do that, because some people will say, I can't afford increased insurance. I can't afford containment. I don't want to put my dog in a 6-foot enclosure and a muzzle on it. And they're like, I can't do all of this. I can't afford all of this. And they surrender the dog. We've committed the dog to a death sentence when it's surrendered to the Humane Society with a dangerous dog declaration.
Yeah, absolutely. Because so, that's a liability.
Yes.
And that liability will go forward right. with that dog
right.
forever.
So we're trying to be cognizant of that too.
I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
The rest of you would.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you have our support.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all I have with regard to coaching, I think, for now.
So I was wondering, so we move on to Rebecca.
Okay, so Robert and I are part of the outreach committee, and we met and kind of went through a handful of things. One of the, we're a little bit in a holding pattern because I have not been able to meet with Johnny yet. So Johnny's the head of communications for the
public information.
Public, okay. And she's the person that Councilwoman Marshall said, you need to make sure you talk to that person before you start formulating messaging or campaigns or anything, because she's the one who's going to know the parameters. So we, now that software, the licensing software is kind of like on target maybe for fall, late fall, we can get with Johnny and start talking about what does that look like for a campaign. Robert and I came up with some really interesting like little slogans and different ideas, but we need to know like what medium can we, you know, are we talking video? Are there any mailing opportunity? Do you do mailers? There's all kinds of things that we just need to explore, but we can't explore them until we know what our parameters are. And it seems that Johnny had some information from years, like, you know, within the past 5 years or so, where there were some campaigns that were developed, but not never executed. And so she was like, oh, maybe we could use some of this at the core, so we're not like reinventing everything. So
when so Leadership Clark County about 3 or 4 years ago, so there's, and I don't know that they're doing it anymore, I think COVID probably wiped the program out, but for years the business community, group of entrepreneurs put together what they called Leadership Clark County. And they would take these up-and-coming community members, entrepreneurs, and say, hey, look, let's get together and let's, in conjunction with the colleges and just all sorts of, be a part of this. We're going to teach you leadership skills. And then at the end of all of this, they have to do a project. Right. And what happens is they do basically like a lottery. So they pay Leadership Clark County, this is their project, they have to do this. So it's like free project. Like,
yeah,
like they, it's like you apply for this it's almost like a scholarship. They're like, hey, take my project. And then they work on it and they do a presentation at the end of their class session. And so one of the last ones that was done, Joanne had said, hey, she applied to have one of the teams in Leadership Clark County, because there's probably like eight teams and they picked different things, and one of them was pet licensing. And how do we increase pet licensing? And so you get a bunch of young minds, or not even young minds, but minds together, and they come up with different, they do research, they come up with different ideas. I remember they came up with the cutest, you know how the canoe, the Clark County canoe, Lewis and Clark, and the canoe is part of the logo. They came up with pets in a canoe, and I loved it. It was so cute. I was like, oh my god, I want to use that so bad. And the PIO office is like, nope. Please, right? So I don't know. Vote for the pets in the canoe.
Okay, and I'll send you what she sent me so you can look it over.
I still have that data stick, by the way.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we had the information. There were a lot of really good ideas in it. It just never materialized. I mean, they made suggestions like, you know, spending $5,000, $10,000 on kiosks that you put in the mall or in Petco or in PetSmart or in vets' offices for people to license their pets and stuff like that. So it ran the gamut. So I would encourage, give that information to you. You can look at it. You can kind of, I don't know what aligns or what inspires you, or oh hey, we should get renewed effort here because I really like this idea. Mm-hmm. Right now, remember, I couldn't get $7,000 to wrap vehicles for licensing, and I'm really going to push, especially when it comes to what increased cost our budget's going to have over the next few years. Mm-hmm. And you just give me, I need to spend a little to make more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so I would love that. I would love for them to say, here's $10,000 for advertising budget or campaign push, because I'm going to make $250,000.
Right.
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 That makes sense.
Yep.
Right. They like guarantees, and I don't know that that's a guarantee, but it certainly would make sense.
Right. Right?
So that would be a helpful endeavor.
Has there been any movement or talk about your dedicated budget?
No.
Okay, because when I met with the chair and the two commissioners, council members, they felt that was an easy ask, an easy, something easy. So it may just need to be nudged along.
I think so, and again, it's not my...
I know it's not.
It's not my area of expertise, and we have finance staff and budget staff, and I think it really needs to come from them and be structured to where they buy off on that instead of your general fund. You don't make enough money as it is to support yourself, so anything actually needs just going to get swept away and not dedicated.
Yeah.
Right? I had a meeting a couple weeks ago about donations, because in this new software, there's a checkbox where I can ask for donations.
Yes.
And people can donate a dollar or $2 or $5, right? Yes. It's like, well, I want to be able to keep that.
Yeah. But
currently, I can't.
Oh,
and it just gets dumped because I don't make enough money to cover my costs. So everything's just going to get, so I don't really get to keep any of it because I'm always in the hole. So
they look at it and go like, no, don't give her any more.
Yeah. Right. You just have to, you know, part of, I think, the reason and the rationale for the increased software and how much that's costing was the fact that we kind of said, this will help us help people license their pets easier. Therefore, we expect licensing revenue to go up. It's not a guarantee.
Right, but and it won't, it'll be less likely to succeed if people don't know about it.
Right.
So right. Outreach, but that was one of my next questions was, do you have a budget for outreach? And if you don't, then that's something we need to try to ask for.
I don't.
For your okay, good enough.
I do not.
Ask for a meeting for donations. Is that what you mean?
Oh, no. I'm saying like the ask the council to give her money when they carve out her dedicated budget to make sure that that's in there.
And it doesn't mean you can't ask for donations that are specific.
Like, yeah.
That would be, that's a whole other accounting thing. I've learned that the way the county does budgeting is, it's a whole thing, right?
Like I could make a donation, but I would have to specify that is earmarked for a specific thing. If I just say, here's something for animal control, then it just gets put in the bank and becomes part of the general fund, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I want, this isn't something we need to like, you know, delve into at the moment, but just kind of throwing it out there because it is a topic, it is something that came up and it could very well be tied to so many things of identifying a nonprofit partner that could work on behalf of animal control, sort of a Friends of Clark County Animal Control kind of entity that could then, you know, be eligible.
Licensing or whatever.
Exactly. That could, and, you know, it's basically, it's a nonprofit conduit where money could come in that could go to outreach, that could go to whatever that supported animal control. Because you have limitations that a nonprofit wouldn't. And I guess the main question that I have in relation to that is that would it be a conflict if individuals on the advisory board were part of that effort, part of that nonprofit? And if not, if so, I mean, it's just, either way, there's a solution. It's just, I don't know if there are legalities.
Promote outreach, trying to get another entity to help us and help us increase our funding.
Yeah.
So does the nonprofit do media kind of?
Well, the nonprofit, I think, would really, I envision that it would really, it would just basically have a core understanding of the goals of animal control. I mean, it could even do something like, that nonprofit could have like an ombudsman program in all the five districts, right? That could do that mediation stuff that you kind of talk. Like there's a lot of little things that could be done to improve the state of things for animals, but it would primarily be to license and raise money. Sell licenses, raise money, you know, any special program, like let's say that there was animal control decided they're going to do a vaccine clinic, which is something that Robert and I talked about of like, could, you know, as a way, like in all the five districts, now all of the council members have a thing, right? They have a thing, we've enrolled them to be supportive of this effort. And we go and do like vaccines, microchips, licenses in all the five districts over a 5-week period. Obviously, like, you guys don't have time to do that, but you know, in conjunction with the advisory board and a nonprofit could actually get their hands on the vaccines and get the volunteer bed and all that stuff. So there are things that they could do that might be really beneficial that kind of function outside the, you know, the parameters.
But I think that what it comes down to is we're trying to seek, it's getting late for you guys, I mean, we're one day or two. We're trying to seek avenues to increase your funding through an outreach of community education. And we have 20 ideas. We just have to figure out which to approach and how to go about it.
Yeah.
You want to go with some of the other things you have on your list?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so something to look at the Arts Council. So the Arts Council in Clark County is actually an advisory board, but they're also a .org, and they have a website and a full entity. So there is a sort of a path for it. So I'll send some links out and just kind of delve into that a little more. Robert and I, we were looking at the current website for licensing, and I'm hoping, we're both hoping that can change and there can be a more, and you know, and that could be something that, like, if we can just, and the Arts Council has something that they do, but that creating a landing page that is so obvious for licensing, and that's something that we can talk to Johnny about and figure out the path for that.
And this is a perfect time for that because we are rolling out a new product, and wouldn't that just go well with,
yes,
we talked about because, yeah.
Okay, so the last two things that I have, and then Robert, you could talk about that payroll deduction project. So I asked about licensing agents, and you said that there's only a few, and is there any room or interest in making it less of a option and more of a mandatory, we love that word, where veterinarians, rescue groups, and breeders, anybody who is selling or adopting an animal out in the county has to issue a license, has to provide a rabies vaccine and a license. Almost every, unless they're under that age, right? Almost every rescue that I know already does the rabies shot. They already do them because you want to send them out to their new home, right, vaccinated.
Well, and I even think that the Humane Society changed their protocol because they weren't doing that and now they are.
Yeah, well, legally, well, they were.
So they
adoptions.
Their adoptions, if they're a child, to my understanding, do leave with a rabies vaccine. However, if it's an intake, if they're doing an intake animal, the animal, as far as to my knowledge, again, I don't work there, but what I see is Bordetella given and distemper parvo given, late treatment and deworming.
Well, now they're doing, they were doing that and they were issuing a license and then saying, like, you have to go to the vet and get your rabies vaccine. And then that was creating, like, when I spoke to Russ, and that was creating like a weird paperwork thing for you guys. But code says that you cannot issue a license to an animal unless they have a rabies vaccine. So you can't have that backward step. Like, you have to, if you're going to issue a license, it has to be issued after the animal is given a rabies vaccine. And that's why they changed their process, because I think it came out of the city contract. So the city was like, you, and city code is very clear, like very clear with, an animal is given a rabies vaccine and then given a license. You can't give them a license and then have them go and get a rabies vaccine. So, so I'm thinking that, you know, licensing agents, if we made it a requirement that if you're going to distribute animals in this county, you need to be licensed, you need to be a licensing agent. And I don't know what everybody thinks about that. That's something you can like think on, but it's also something that would have to go through code, and that would be awesome to have before the end of August if that's something. So maybe we could talk, since you're kind of in that code world, we can talk a little bit about that. And the other thing that Robert and I kind of looked at and kicked around a little bit was the idea of charging some type, I think you referred to it as kind of like a registration fee for horses and livestock, right? Okay, there is a, right now in the county, it's dogs and cats, right? So all the people that have dogs and cats are paying for all,
theoretically, and even the livestock
mm-hmm. stuff. So since they are a stakeholder in all of this, they're part of this arena.
Or the taxpayers.
Or the taxpayer, right. Taxpayers, you know, licensing fees, it's all going. It would be nice to fold them in and have them be a part of that process. And, you know, we've got 30,000 plus horses estimated in this county. If that was, you know, even a $5, a $10 registration fee, licensing fee, whatever you want to call it, that could, you know, that could be
$1 million.
That could be significant revenue for that would help offset all of the efforts and costs that animal control is facing in relation to livestock and horses.
And I think what we were trying to do is there's a lot of things we could have worked on, but we thought we should focus our outreach on ways that would improve financing for you and improve services for customers.
Yep.
And so that's why we are tipping this approach. Mm-hmm. So
I'll tell you, the horse cruelty cases are the most expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, exactly. And I think that there's a, you know, and I think that the, especially after some of the information that Rebecca had brought to us about the code changes and some of the things that the horse community would really like to see is work, you know, to like, let's change the tune and let's work together to just elevate services for them, elevate, you know, modify whatever codes are really hindering their processes, and, you know, and then look to them to really support that type of a code change, because it could be significant, right? It could be a significant revenue.
So my question for you is, can we add horses to the licensing piece?
You can propose to add horses. This is what I would suggest. I suggest that you reach out to the Executive Horse Council and you start having these discussions.
Okay.
And you see how the community feels about it. Because what is it how do I tag a horse? How do I identify a horse? How do I, you know, with a dog tag, you pay us money, we give you a product, we give you a tag, we register you in the system. Adding horses is fine, but how do I tag a horse that is it's running down the road? How do I know who that horse belongs to? Mm. Right? Like, is it a tag in the ear?
Is it a chip?
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Something we can look at is following some of the big natural disasters, where I think the big one happened in Houston when that big hurricane hit, and people like, okay, we're gonna do better this time. Everybody got out with their animals, but then people were showing up and just claiming like, that's my horse right there, and there was no way. So I know that the horse community something has gone on in there, and we can find that out.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is my suggestion, is reach out, and we need to get information and buy off, and what does that look like from the horse council? Because I will issue a horse license all day long.
Okay.
3,000 horses.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the last thing is, Robert, to talk about that payroll deduction.
Sure. I want to reemphasize, though, our big thing was to get the message out, what does licensing do for our community and for the care of pets? And then, so that's what we approached. We did some other all kinds of slogans. What did you put out in the media? I talked in the past about getting the free media 15-second blurbs. We were coming up with ideas for that. I also tried to, it's not successful yet, but everybody liked the idea of having an optional payroll deduction. People to donate $100 a month to the Animal Control and Humane Society combination. And everybody likes the idea. Even the Humane Society president I talked to, she liked the idea. But the timing is always difficult because animals are a lesser priority for people. And they always put out their decision-making 9-12 months out in advance. Mm-hmm. So we haven't given up on that idea, but that goes along with our trying to increase funding, which increase better services to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And I'd like to ask if the board is okay with the committees continuing to meet between now and the next meeting, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sarah, are you okay with that?
She logged off.
Okay. So then if you don't mind, the we can communicate about the committee continuation work.
I encourage any committee meetings in between meetings that where you need the extra time to do the research or find out the information to better go down these paths. I'm go for it.
But going back to what you had brought up into the committee meeting, I found that doing the extra research got us the standard of care from other locations, and it really helped to enhance what we were able to do.
Okay, I think that probably goes.
That being really said, well. Anybody else want to talk about anything, or do you want to add anything?
No, nope. That's it.
Talk about?
Outreach, I was wondering if you probably did consider like sending an email or a letter to new people who move here so that they're aware of the licensing. Like, I don't know if there's a way to do that.
Honestly, I think that I'm waiting to talk to Johnny.
Okay.
Yeah, to see, because I kind of got the impression that there are very specific parameters that we have to follow when we talk about messaging. And I'm with you, like people that are new, some type of like, however we get to those people. I think people that are, we should have that in different languages. Like there's all types of information that we can focus on distributing.
And the little snippet blurbs, we try to keep them very succinct and pointed so that they get the message across. What does licensing do for you and our community? It does A, B, and C. So we encourage you to, you know, basically license your pet in a 15-second video or radio thing or whatever bullets to me. So we'll continue on that.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for your sharing about the committee as well. That brings us up to any special orders. The special orders that we have are basically setting a date for next week or the week after. Mm-hmm. And we'll get further response on that. Any announcements for the board? Can they go to the order? Anybody want to? I do. I want to compliment you, Officer Leslie and Donna, and you for putting a long hour, long 3 hours in with us on this. And I appreciate the time. I know everybody's getting really tired. So thank you. I guess that's it.
We got some good work done tonight.
I think so. I officially adjourn this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you're looking at licensing for any kind of livestock, speak with the